You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Monday morning to you. Mike McMarin for a Monday edition of All Marine Radio right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. Hope you're having a good day wherever you are, and I hope it's working out for you. Let me get my volume right in my head because I'm killing myself here. All right, I think I'm good. Anyway, good morning. Tell you what we're going to do on, going to spend a little time on Afghanistan this morning as, you know, you're kind of cruising through the weekend. For me, recovering from the punishment the firefighters gave me up in Clark County. Yeah, trying to do post-traumatic winning four times in a day, man. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. That took a toll on me. And then went down and was out and about on Friday. Got a chance to talk to former Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, Mike Barrett. Got a chance to see Mike Regner, who's been another great help to post-traumatic winning. Former Major General, United States Marine Corps. Got a chance to see former Sergeant Major Joe Hool. And Joe's been working on the Carolina Museum of the Marine. And now again, notice it didn't say of the Marine Corps. So he wants it to be about Marines. But he just secured via the state legislation in the state of North Carolina, I think something like $27 million in order to break ground and things like that. And I will tell you, I think that the success of the National Museum of the Marine Corps had no small amount to do with this funding, because you know, all of a sudden Jacksonville, North Carolina is going to hold maybe the second largest Marine Corps museum in the world. And as people have seen, the stuff that comes out of the rafters, the stuff that comes out of the scrapbooks, the stuff that gets donated is unbelievable, and they become these shrines, as the National Museum has become. And so, Friday at the Marine Corps West Expo, it was good stuff, and so I enjoyed being down there. And seeing the people that that I've met, and again, hopefully continue to do good work with. One of the things I talked to Joe Hool about was, you know, he said, Mac, we're going to have guest speakers all the time. He said, and you've got to come back. And I said, Joe, you know, I'll be there in a heartbeat. So anyhow, that's exciting stuff. And just want to say congratulations to him. That is, I can't remember how many years he told me he's been working on, 26 years or something like that. Something crazy. So anyway, I got a chance to do that. And then kind of catching up on sleep over the weekend. And I had a bit of a cold that I'm just getting over. And so all of a sudden, start seeing news headlines on I believe it was Saturday. And so let me just go over you with you. And then separately today, Tim Lynch going to join us. And Tim spent a lot of time in that part of Afghanistan. So you're going to hear from Tim and kind of set the stage a little bit. Tim will tell you about, you know, what goes on in the region, the tribal politics, blah, 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 the economies, ethnically, who's there, you know, how do they make their money, you know, all the things that, you know, Timmy was pretty familiar with. So then Tim has a lot of friends in Afghanistan still to this day. Some of them listen to this program. And so he will, when this kind of stuff happens, he picks up the phone and he says, hey, you know, or gets on the keyboard and, hey, what's going on? And so we'll spend about 30 minutes with Tim. And then Jeff Kenny's, he actually joined us last night to talk about, you know, advising, you know. You know, how do you, I mean, honestly, and you'll hear me say this a couple times, but this is the mission of our special forces, okay? People think special forces and they think direct action. If you go back at the conception of our special forces, they were people that would go do these kind of missions without any publicity or fanfare, sometimes without any acknowledgement, that they would support indigenous forces that were fighting our enemies. And so if you go back to the movie Green Berets, I mean, you look at John Wayne rolling around in his tiger stripe uniform in Vietnam. The mission was not direct action. The mission was, you know, developing forces, living amongst them, sharing their danger and whatnot. So, I mean, this is what the Green Berets in particular were stood up to do. And so Jeff's going to come on and explain, he's going to explain, you know, the art of it, you know, how do you find security in that environment? How do you find security in that environment? So let me, and then I'll tell you what, I want to play a segment. So yesterday, what I wound up doing, was it yesterday? I think so. You know how much I love to clean. If you listen to the program, you know that, like, I love to clean. And for whatever reason, cleaning makes me happy. And I'm not, I wish I was joking, but I'm not. Okay, so I had to get my office in order, right? After running around for a week, there was stuff everywhere. And so what was the messiest part of my house was the studio, right? So it's where I pack my stuff. It's like, so anyway, I'm like, I've got to organize this stuff. And then, you know how sometimes when you start cleaning, you expand the project as you go. That's what I did. And slowly but surely it became a, you know, class 10 cleaning event. And so that's what I wound up doing yesterday. And in the course of it, what I did was I was starting on Saturday evening. I started watching videos about the Hanoi Hilton. Okay. And so I watched YouTube video after YouTube video after YouTube video. And then yesterday, I have a couple of audiobooks. And I'd recommend these titles to you if you if and when you ever get a chance, if and when you're ever interested about, if and when you're ever interested in the Hanoi Hilton. One is called Leading with Honor by an Air Force colonel by the name of Lee Ellis. Okay. That's one of the books. Now, the other book is called Innovation. 6 Years in the Hanoi Hilton, and an extraordinary story of courage and survival in Vietnam by Amy Shively Hawk. And the story is about her father, Jim Shively. So anyway, I'm listening to them, and in the and I'm listening to that, and so then I transition to the second book, which is Lee Ellis. And Lee Ellis, he kind of tells the story of Vietnam, and then he talks about how that can apply to you in your workplace, this lesson, and then he applies it to you. So anyway, so he gets this part, and he says that they read Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning in the Hanoi Hilton. And I had no idea. So I want you to listen to that. I knew that they did. And then he says, and then 60 days after I get back from Vietnam, I see Frankl speak at the University of Georgia or Georgia Tech or something like that. So this is an excerpt from Lee Ellis's book. It's called Leading with Honor, if I'm not mistaken. Leading with Honor. All right. And I was cleaning, and I just froze. And I was like, holy shit.
I was put into the corn crib with 4 Air Force comrades under the leadership of Major Bob Barnett, USAF, who had been my SRO for a while up at Dog Patch. The rules were different now. We were allowed outside for most of each day to visit with all the men in the plantation. When we realized that we had all been captured in the same time frame, late 1967 through early 1968, we were greatly encouraged. This turned out to be an accurate sign that they were preparing to release us in order of capture, as our camp policy had prescribed. A few days later, we were directed to assemble in the yard. Through an interpreter, the camp commander told us that an agreement had been signed in Paris ending the war, and that we would go home in several groups over a 2-month period in concert with the final withdrawal of the U.S. from South Vietnam. There were no cheers or any display of emotion whatsoever. We were not going to celebrate, only to have our hopes dashed. Besides that, we were concerned they might use our celebration as a photo op for a propaganda piece. We were each given a copy of the protocol to the agreement regarding the release of POWs. Some of the men stood around in groups reading it. Others took it back to their rooms. It was an official document clarifying the agreement and our impending release. This was the best sign yet that the day we had been hoping and praying for was near. That evening, we gathered out in the yard. It was a mellow time. Some groups were walking and talking with cellmates from the old days. Others were just hanging out. After a while, we heard music and saw that a group had gathered around Bill Butler, who had somehow convinced the V to lend him a guitar. Before long, we had a song fest going. The atmosphere was relaxed, as if we were sitting around a campfire while on vacation at the beach. Gradually, the heavy burdens of worry that our minds had carried for so long began to slip away. The V locked us in at 10 p.m. each evening, but the anticipation made it difficult to sleep. We were like little children waiting for the opening of presents on Christmas Day. Sensing that we needed something to pass the time, the V opened a storehouse of books that our families had sent over the years and handed out one book to each room. We read them aloud so we could all enjoy them together. In the days leading up to our release, we finished several good ones, including Hawaii by James Michener, Kabluna by Gontran de Ponsin, And best of all, Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
I heard that and I just stopped. And I'm like, holy shit, they read that just before they were released and they had lived it. That's the crazy thing. They had lived it.
Amazing experience sitting in a POW camp reading Frankl's monumental book about surviving the Holocaust. Although his trials were much more severe than ours were, we all felt a special kinship with him. I could never have imagined that within 60 days, I would be listening to Frankl speak at the University of Georgia.
How amazing is that, right? I was just like, wow. And even his caveat, you know, our suffering, you know, was dwarfed by his suffering. Yeah, not by much, my friend. Not by much. So it's just amazing. Amazing, amazing, amazing. So anyway, that was an interesting part of my weekend. We'll get Tim Lynch going to join me in about 14 minutes. The United States Marine Corps band makes this morning official. Good morning to you. This is dedicated to our special forces soldiers who are right now around the world doing all kinds of crazy stuff. They stick their necks out like not too many people do. And we lost two of them, another one with a gunshot wound to the head, another one with a gunshot wound to the chest. Hopefully both of them make it out all right. But this is to them. They do a unique thing that requires a unique skill set. So from us to them.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night? nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Time for us to check the weather around Marine Land. It is currently cloudy and 46 in Quantico. It is sunny and 67 at Camp Lejeune, so that's nice. 29 Palms, warmed up a little bit. Clouds at 46. Pendleton, clouds at 49. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark, cloudy, and 61. They've got four weather alerts. Like, what's going on in Hawaii? Yeah, good thing our guy's not there. Mr. Hawaii himself. There's a flood advisory in Hawaii. There's a wind advisory. There's a high surf advisory. I'm sorry, there's a high surf warning, right? R means it's real. Gale warning, R means it's real. Right? Advisory, right? No R. Well, there is, but we don't talk. It's a silent R in advisory. So a little bit of wind and water in Hawaii. All right, where were we? In Okinawa, dark, cloudy, 58, pretty normal. Lashkar Gah has actually warmed up a little bit. Dark, cloudy, and raining early in the evening, 57 degrees right now. Lashkar Gah in the south central part of Helmand in the opium basket of the opium cradle of Afghanistan. And then we're going to talk about Nangarhar province, which is in the northeast, right along the Pakistani border in the mountains. Couldn't be more different from Helmand, which is flat, desert-like, whatnot. Got colder in Iraq, in Ramadi. It is dark, cloudy, and 40 degrees early in the evening, so it's going to get cold in Ramadi. So, spring, not spring in Iraq yet. And at the home of All Marine Radio, where we actually are today. Yeah, go figure. Mostly cloudy and 55 degrees here. I'm looking for a high of 72 with rain off and on today. So, and then tomorrow, sunny and 72. And on Wednesday, mostly sunny and 68. So warmer than my phone says it's going to be. Yeah, how about that? We love it. Shithole weather updates. From our guy. That's right, Chris Cox. Shithole weather is full up round and on the move. Position, Princeton, Massachusetts. NEADS trains service dogs. And there's a poster of the sign that says NEADS. I would say it's something New England, AD, not sure, service dogs. Seen often just down the road here in Wachusett's Mountain, learning to work among the people. Current conditions, rain, 32 degrees, looking for a high of 37 today. Solid cloud cover, winds out of the southwest at 10, gusting to 25. Chris from Webster out. From Nancy, hi Mac, exclamation mark. We are at the high temperature of 42 in Pleasantville. Raining winds are moderate, northwest 8 to 10, down to 33 tonight. Snow coming. Erie is a copycat. Erie is always a copycat. The had to bag it after four runs in near zero visibility. I built the fire. Actually, it's pretty good looking fire. Pretty good looking fire. Cox doesn't work anymore. Yeah, go figure. He doesn't work. I don't rightly understand. Every time I hear from the guy, he never works, right? He's always going someplace now to go skiing. So go figure. All right. Hey, it's a great gig if you can get it. Yeah. So anyhow, let's see. Tim Lynch is going to join us next. Yeah. And then we'll get that thing rigged up. And then we'll kind of talk about the region that this event occurred in. We'll talk about how they make their money. We'll talk about the rivalries in the region. Sometimes they're tribal. Sometimes they're inside the tribe between families and stuff like that. How this stuff gets happened. And, and a lot of times it is not ideological driven by the Taliban. It's somebody's pissed at somebody because of something. And in this culture, when that happens, right, you got to go kill somebody. That's the way it works. So, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, Tim Lynch will join us, and we'll do that. And then Jeff Kenny will join us, and we will go ahead and we'll talk to Jeff about the whole difficulty of what it is to be an advisor. How do you do security? How do you lay your head on your bed at night and actually go to sleep when you sleep among them? Not always the most comforting feeling. Anyway, well, again, it's something you got to get used to, and that's what our special forces, guys and girls do. And this is the job they do. And it's vitally important to what we do. So anyway, we'll take a break. Tim Lynch is going to join us next. More of All Marine Radio coming up on a Monday. Alex Holling is going to join us tomorrow right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Houston, we have a problem. So, but we always have Plan B. Yeah, that's a beautiful part of life with people that aren't as dumb as everybody else thinks we are. More Ball Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted the fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess beggars can't be choosy.
All right, let me just kind of read you a story from Sofra. Update: how the Special Forces team was ambushed, and then we'll bring Timmy on. But this is just so that you understand. This is written yesterday. Saturday. A Special Forces team was ambushed in Afghanistan by a rogue Afghan policeman. It was initially described as a green on blue, which means two units, kind of mixing it up. Two Americans have been killed and six wounded. In addition, at least eight Afghans have also died as a result of the attack. Sources with intimate knowledge of the incident told Sofrep that the Green Berets of Operational Detachment Group, ODA, 7313, and the company command element of A Company, 3rd Battalion, 7th Special Forces Group, had just finished a key leader engagement, known as KLE, with a local leader when they were ambushed. The American element, which was accompanied by a partner force of Afghan Special Operations Forces, which is typical, had moved to a nearby field to wait for an extraction helicopter. While they were in a pickup zone posture, the rogue Afghan policeman attacked. The individual essentially mowed down the Special Forces operators and their partner force elements with a heavy machine gun. A Green Beret and a Special Operations Team Alpha SOTA soldier who was attached to the team were killed on the spot. The company executive officer was shot in the chest and is in critical condition. The company sergeant major was shot in the head. The rest of the American wounded WIAs, wounded in actions, have gunshot wounds to the legs. All casualties have been evacuated to U.S. medical facilities. Colonel Sonny Leggett, the spokesperson for the U.S. Forces Afghanistan, said that an individual in an Afghan uniform opened fire on the combined U.S. and Afghan force with a machine gun. The motive behind the attack is unknown at this time. The incident is under investigation. The green on blue friendly forces attacking U.S. troops incident took place in the Shirzad district of Nangarhar province, which is located in eastern Afghanistan. SOTA soldiers are attached to Special Forces ODA, right, operational detachment, right, and provide tactical signals intelligence, SIGINT, and electronic warfare capabilities. It means they listen to chatter in the surrounding area. ODAs are typically comprised of 12 Green Berets and specialize in unconventional warfare, foreign internal defense, direct action, and special reconnaissance, among other things. So anyway, they've released the identities of those two soldiers that are killed. But again, 12.7 machine gun round. Hopefully it's a grazing wound to the head, and that the sergeant major is going to fully recover. But And then the gunshot wound, again, with a 12.7, that's a 50 cal round to the chest. That's not insignificant. So anyway, joining us is Tim Lynch. Tim, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine, Mac. How about yourself?
I'm all right. This was your old stomping grounds, yes?
I wrote about this right when it happened because I've done KLE meetings in Sherzad, a bunch of them. And yes, it is my own stomping grounds. I know the area well.
Okay, let's kind of give everybody an orientation. First, let's talk about where it is geographically in Afghanistan.
Okay, so Nangarhar province is all the way to the east of Afghanistan on the border with Pakistan, about midway between that long border. It's the termination point, Nangarhar province is, for the Khyber Pass, which comes in at the Torkham border.
So, and hold on. So just so everybody knows, like, even if you didn't pay attention in your high school or grammar school history class, you've heard of the Khyber Pass, right? Because it is the historical, right, pass in the region. And there's been shit going on there for thousands of years, right, because of its strategic value in the region. So this place is no stranger to confrontation, and it is one of the strategic choke points in certainly the region, and the reason we've all heard of it is because it's one of the choke points in the world. So go ahead, Timmy.
And that's critical because Nangarhar, that Torkham border, is the biggest port of entry for commerce coming into Afghanistan, virtually 90%. The province itself is a gigantic river delta. The Kabul River and Kunar River flow in at Jalalabad, the capital. And on its eastern and western sides, it's mountainous, real mountainous. And so you've got Highland Pashtun, and that's where you're going to find them in Shinwari, Kogiani, and the eastern side.
Wait,
and you've got the Shinwari tribes, which you're going to find
in
the lowlands.
Stop. Okay, now you got to slow down because we're not going to understand. You're going to start talking in detail that we're not going to understand. So, all right, so you got the two rivers that join there, which is probably the reason that this whole thing is significant, because throughout our history, right? You know, places where rivers meet tend to be places where cities tend to grow up. Let's talk about ethnically. Well, first of all, before that, economically, you and Jeff gave us a class not too long ago about timber, and I can't remember what province we were talking about and how important that was and all of that. Talk to us about what drives this region economically.
What drives Jalalabad primarily is trade. Jalalabad being the capital, Nangarhar province being a very well situated province, the standard of living is high, standard of education is higher. It's an agricultural, outside of the main cities, it's an agricultural based economy. They also have the largest deposit of talc powder, and that's sitting up on the border with Pakistan, where ISIS has been. No coincidence there. And they've got significant gem mining in the mountains. But the timber is Kunar. Within Jalalabad, it's primarily famous for oranges and its agricultural produce. I mean, famous.
All right. So if you could tell us what drives the region economically, 1, 2, 3, what would it be?
1 would be international trade coming across the border. 2 would be, in the last 20 years, the United States presence and the amount of money we've dumped into it. And 3 would be their booming agricultural product. Because in the wintertime, they don't get much snow or much cold. They've got two growing seasons down there. Wow. And it's where the Kabul, where the kings used to spend the winter, was in Jalalabad, because it's very pleasant.
All right, talk to me about ethnically, what makes up the Nangarhar province.
You've got four primary tribal groupings, mostly Shinwari, and they're around Jalalabad and along the plains. They're farmers. They're considered a part of the Shinwari. They're actually a tribe onto themselves. The second biggest is the Kogiani, which are in Sherzad, where this incident happened, and the eastern side of the province, and they are Hill Pashtuns, and traditionally enemies of the Shinwari, although that's not evident today.
Okay, so Shinwari, not Pashtun.
Shinwari, all Pashtun. They're all Pashtun.
Okay.
They're all of them Pashtun. And the only ones that are recalcitrant would be the Mohammeds, which are also up in Kunar, which are also cooperating with ISIS. They're the only tribe that, as a tribal entity, are rather combative to others. And the fourth grouping are the weirdest of them all, the Pashe'i, who speak a Dardic language called Pashe'i, which sounds to me like Chinese. And they're called hillbillies, but they also provide most of the muscle within the police forces and within the warlords. And the very first warlord we hired to go after bin Laden was Dasht Muhammad, was Pashe'i, which was very tone deaf by us to hire him. But that will show you how prominent the Pashe'i have been in the Taliban times, and not so much now. But they're a strange crew. Listening to them talk is weird, and that's primarily it. But it's not the tribes that matter in Nangarhar. It's the political parties. And in the area that we're talking about, the eastern side, the biggest political party when I first got there was Hezbi Islami Gulabuddin, HIG. They were not Taliban. They were not on the government side. They were Hig fighters. All of them were Hig fighters.
What does that mean?
Hig.
Okay, now remember, I got.
I'm sorry.
Don't start speaking like Watusi to me, because
you're
going to go into the weeds and you're going to lose us all.
I know. I apologize.
So pull. No. Just pull back. Question. Basic question one. In a part of the country where tribes are important, where families are important, how does a political party become important?
Because they're based on tribal groupings and they subsume families. You got to keep in mind that there's tons of intermarriage going on, and commerce is in the lowlands, particularly commerce is what's driving trade. It's the international commerce. You've got parties that are Pashtun national parties that transcend these tribal groupings. You had the Hig, which was run by a warlord, Hekmatyar, a very famous warlord.
We don't care about him.
But a brutal one. But they, what I'm saying is the eastern part of Nangarhar was not Taliban. It was Hig. The other part had some Taliban in it, but they didn't start getting active till 2010. And the rivals that happen within that province are based on land and land deeds and who owns what. It drives all the violence, all of it.
Got it. All right. So talk to us about. You know, this is the classic special forces mission, right? Now, when we think of special forces, we think of special operations command and direct action and things like that. But truth be told, our special operations initially, you know, was all about helping indigenous forces resisting our opponents around the world, many times without the acknowledgement that they were actually there. So this is the classic, you know, special forces mission, and key leader engagement is kind of what they do in terms of trying to expand influence. Talk to us about, are there any specific challenges relative to working in this part of Afghanistan as opposed to working in Iraq, as opposed to, I mean, because key leader engagement is key leader engagement, right? Embedding with the indigenous forces has its own set of unique challenges. Is there anything in this part of the country that would make this more, you know, make it more dangerous than any other part?
Yeah, the problem is they can go and talk to all the key leaders they want. I don't know what they have to offer them because they're representing a central government that the key leaders perceive as not legitimate, and a central government that has been nothing but has not been watching out for their interests, which has been actively trying to subvert them and take their interest and their land.
What do you mean? And so explain that.
You have a government in Kabul that was run by Helmut Karzai. Now you've got Ghani, President Ghani. The Kabul government is a kleptocracy. It's famous for not functioning correctly, for bribing, for corruption.
Right.
If you remember
here's what. Whenever I hear people say that, it's like, dude, that's how their world has always run. So it's like we speak of that like it's some kind of fucking anomaly, and it's not. It's just business as usual.
It's not business as usual from the central government of Kabul coming down there. That's what they got a provincial governor to put the friggin' mitts to him and start at that level. The central government is not perceived as legitimate to these guys. That's not the way it used to be. They'll tolerate that from the provincial governor because the provincial governor in turn provides them something. But if you're representing the Kabul government and some of these more out of the way places, I don't know what it is you have to say, because in Sherzad district, you've got a road that runs down to Kogiani. All the way to the east of that is fertile farmland, which is inaccessible by big trucks because the three bridges that connect all those roads together were blown by the Soviets. I've got pictures of them on my blog from 2008. What those guys told the army guys is, hey, how about fixing our bridges? How do we get anything but opium to market if we can't have bridges in a road to drive our stuff to it? That's been their issue for 18 years now. So although it is a traditional special forces mission, the only special forces guy I personally saw who did it right was Jim Gant. But Jim went there and lived.
Okay, he don't get on. So, okay, stop now. Stop. So when we talk about this decision of the United States to stay in Afghanistan, to expand the ground war and attempt to create something that's never been created in the history of the country, namely a strong federal government, you're seeing the clash of a federal government that tries to extend its mitts, corruption as it is, into a province that has never known that, and the recoiling of the people that live in the province, the businessmen that make money in that province, to that.
It is the recoiling. And I sent you an email before we went on that has some pictures from the Jalalabad land deed office that shows you what the land deeds currently, well, what they looked like 10 years ago. And they're a collection in folders that are hundreds of years old, probably artifacts. Right. I had proposed to the mayor that we bring in, that we digitize those, that it's possible, that I think we could find the money to do that. The governor wanted nothing to do with that. The last thing he wanted. I also sent you a picture of traditional.
So the reason, and again, just so everybody knows, the last thing he would want, that the reason is a rules-based order is not really what we're looking for.
The governor at the time had been a warlord in Kandahar that helped us throw the Taliban out and was a rival to Karzai and was put in Nangarhar, where he had control of the border, hoping that the amount of money he sucked out of there would keep him happy and out of Kandahar, where Karzai's brother was running things until he got assassinated. And Karzai's brother was an unpleasant man. The Sherzai, the governor of Jalalabad, was a reasonable man. I liked him personally, but he, I also sent a picture of the Afghan police burning out a village, which is what the Pashtuns do when you don't cooperate, when you've really screwed up. But they're burning out a village on what he claimed was governor's land that I knew was earmarked for development as part of the Nangarhar Inc. plan, which never came to fruition. But I sat there taking photographs until they started shooting at us, and we had to leave. But they were shooting people, burning out houses. It was quite dramatic. So the government will do that to seize land, but not do that to clear out recalcitrant tribes, like, let's say, Ganjigal, for instance. You see, and that's what frost me like you wouldn't believe. I get so pissed off. And I also would submit to you that when I went to Sherzad, You're risking one guy to come down there and see what it is they want done. What can I do for you? What do you guys need? They came to me first. I got guarantees. I got the mayor of Gandymac rode with me all the way down there, and they're responsible for my security. And I felt I had a rifle and pistol and shit, of course, but I felt perfectly safe. Perfectly safe. It would have been a sin for them to allow anything to happen to me when I'd been invited down to see what it is they needed. I think that's an appropriate way of doing it. I'm not sure that at this late stage, exposing our Green Berets, I mean, who are, those guys are, they're not cheap. You can't find many of them. They just don't reproduce them easily. Exposing them to take care of what is basically trying to promote the central government to people who know all about the central government, I don't see that as – I can't imagine what they thought that would accomplish, and I'm against it.
But we do it all the time. And honestly, there's no – I mean, none of us knows yet a reason why this happened. And it could have been personal family shit, right? It didn't need to be Taliban driven. It doesn't need to be ideological driven. I mean, this guy's family wronged this guy, wronged another family, wronged me. And so this is why I'm going to, again, just so everybody knows, there was what, 6 or 8 Afghan special forces soldiers killed in this thing. So it doesn't look like, it does not look like that the Americans may have been the primary target, right? Anybody, until you know who this guy is and his motivation, anybody who speculates as to the root cause is just given their swag, right?
That's exactly right. And I would say the simplest answer was he's a Taliban infiltrator, based only on the fact that they did that to get General Raznik down in Kandahar, and he was irreplaceable. If you'll remember, General Miller was right in that guy's sights.
Yeah, but Timmy, there was nobody, a command sergeant major, right? I mean, that's not why waste the juice.
No, I understand. Well, I tell you why, because you're killing American Green Berets.
I agree. I agree with that. But again, my point in that, that's your opinion, right?
That is my opinion. Tell you something that buttresses Jeff's point that he's going to make. And that is, this was an ANP policeman on a Dishka. The one thing the ANP have bitched about since time immemorial is the fact that nobody will give them heavy guns. They've never had them. They don't have them in their TO. What was that guy doing on a Dishka? That makes me think there's more going on here than my initial simple assumption would lead to. It's a disturbing revelation.
Right. Yeah. All right. Anything else that you've seen relative to this whole thing that breaks squelch for you?
The only thing that I find amusing is I've seen very little in the press as to anything other than straight reporting. Fox News was playing the green on blue angle, which Jeff and I were talking Saturday night. I said that was bullshit from the beginning. I didn't think so. And we turned out to be right. I do believe that most of the mainstream reading is waiting to see what Trump says so they can say the exact opposite. It's the only amusing thing about this whole damn debacle, because this is a tragic loss, and I just got to wonder why.
But again, I mean, are you suggesting that we just pull our special forces guys out of there because there's nothing good they could do there?
It's not fair for me to say, because I don't know what key leader engagement meant. They may have been going looking for some allies to go specifically mount an operation. I have no idea. I know what it's meant in the past. I know what key leader engagements were when Jeff was doing them, when you and Dave were doing them, and when I was doing them. And I know that most of them were pretty much of a big waste of time.
They always represented, though, was an opportunity to work with a local leader in a project that was of mutual interest that might serve to facilitate a better relationship in the region. That was always the broad theme.
That is true. But I would submit to you that somebody like me, because I'm not the only guy that did this stuff, somebody like me who's been there for years and can tease through some of the complexities and not get taken advantage of and is going to be there for years, that's better left done to us. And I would still submit that we should look at our experiences there and think about this in the future, because I still think we're going to be doing something similar in the near future. I mean, I know I'm the only one saying this, and I think it's going to be in Mexico, to be perfectly honest.
Tell everybody what, how long you were there and in what capacity you were there.
I was in Afghanistan for 8 years. I went originally as a project manager for the American Embassy Security Force. It was a bridge contract. And once that was stood up, I left to go on my own, started my own security company, which when it was still the Wild West in Afghanistan. And it was in that experience I learned how to move around the country. And as that kind of wound down, because we just couldn't sustain it, I got taken on by a USAID implementation team who had a different approach. And what their approach was, no security company, no armored cars, no elaborate compounds. I'm going to put guys out there and we're going to do projects and we're going to do them safely. It was built around some South Africans who had been doing it from 2004. And I came in and did Jalalabad and Gardez at first, then all of Nangarhar. And then I moved down when you guys showed up, I moved down to take over the Southwest and did Nimroz Nimroz and Helmand. So I spent a lot of time there. My guest house in Jalalabad, I had a bar every Thursday night. It was full of expats. I mean, 60, 70, tons of women, mostly NGO types. My kids were there with me. I had a pool and I was very, very safe, traveling most of Nangarhar. Very safe, basically because everybody knew who the hell I was and what I was all about. And they kind of liked me.
So the bottom line for this event, anybody trying to understand it, is there's a spectrum. You said that you and Jeff right off the bat rejected the blue on green event. This could be anywhere on the spectrum from this guy was pissed at somebody who was in or affiliated with a friend who was in this group of either Afghan soft guys or American soft guys, and decided that today was going to be the day when I have a chance to even this score for my family, and did that. Or it could be, you know, a Taliban orchestrated event, or it could be something in the middle. The bottom line is that when these things happen, without somebody saying something, and if this was a Taliban event, they'd be all over it. They would have pictures of the guy like they did. I can't remember, one or two
Rasnik,
times ago.
The guy killed Rasnik. Yeah,
writings from the guy. If they had that stuff, we would have seen it by now. We would have seen the Taliban claim. So to me, it's not so much that, and so. But again, we don't know. But it is describing what key leader engagement is helps everybody. Describing the cultural dynamics and the economics in the region helps everybody. And so thanks for coming on and shining a little bit of light on, certainly a tragedy for the American military community, for the nation, and certainly for two, maybe as many as four American families that will deal with this. And then, about a half a dozen Americans that were wounded, and again, wounded by 50 cal at close range. I don't want to say that involves loss of limb, but when something that big goes through your leg, there's not a whole lot left where that thing went through. So that's about a half a dozen guys. So keep them in your thoughts and prayers as well. All right, Timmy, we will talk to you on Thursday, man. People want to read more of what you've written. Where do they find it?
I posted a post on this on Free Range International, and it got picked up by Soldier Fortune and Michael Yon. It's bouncing all over the place right now, but there's some pictures in there, and like it basically said the same thing I said here.
Got it. And what's the website?
It's www.freerangeinternational, like the chickens, freerangeinternational.com.
Got it. And we'll put that link up along with Soldier Fortune. Is a pretty decent map. It kind of shows you where along the western border of Afghanistan, towards the eastern end of Nangarhar province, that this area exists. So you get a decent idea of that. And then we'll put Timmy's link to his story as well. So anyway, I appreciate you hopping on, bud. Thank you.
Hey, no problem, brother.
There you have it.
Out here.
Tim Lynch on a Monday morning. We'll take a break. Jeff Kinney will come on, and I wanted to have Jeff on to talk about kind of, you know, the advising thing. How do you do this thing? How do you sleep at night? How do you, you know, how do you lay your head on your pillow at night and actually go to sleep? And so Jeff talks about that, and Jeff has similar experiences. The other thing you're going to hear Jeff talk about, I mean, this is similar to the, you know, the thing that happened when Corporal Dakota Myers earned his Medal of Honor. And, you know, they're going on key leader engagement, and people knew they were coming, and as a result, it was a deliberate ambush. And, you know, the things that you do, Jeff will talk about the things you do in terms of fire support. You know, in case you do have trouble, there's things that you can do, you know, to let them know that, hey, help is on the way. And once they know help is on the way, that tends to take the steam out of the event. And but at the end of the day, this doesn't sound like one of those events. It sounds like it happens at very, very close proximity, which negates all of that. So anyway, we'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, a Monday edition, trying to understand what happened in Afghanistan. Coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.